This is Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith.
Fracking is a hot topic in the United States. I thought I knew the ins and outs, but not really, until I read the book Fracking Pennsylvania, Flirting with Disaster. The author is a university professor. He's a longtime journalist with many books to his credit. Now he's doing a weekly radio show as well. It's called The Frack Report. I'm pleased to welcome Dr. Walter Brash to Radio EcoShock. Hello, Walter.
Good morning or evening or wherever you are.
Right, we're heard around the world. So your book was another education for me. Out of all your other interests, what led you to investigate fracking so thoroughly?
Well, I didn't really plan to do that. It was one of those cases where I already had done a book that included energy, and I really didn't know that much about fracking. And I got information on a proposed bill in the Pennsylvania legislature that was going to gag physicians from finding out what fluids were used in the fracking process. And nobody else was on that story, and I looked at it, and I kept trying to figure out why would they keep physicians from knowing. And that led me to ask a number of questions, and I did a series of three columns about fracking. It was a very, very tough learning curve under tight deadlines. And then I said, okay, that's it. And then people were saying, you've got to do more. And there wasn't anything else out there at the time. And so that turned into the book on what is fracking, what the problems are, and the health and environmental problems that go along with that.
I want to talk to you more about the health problems, but let's back up a little bit. Pennsylvania is such a beautiful state. I've been there, but it has a sad history of resource boom and bust. Do you think that makes the state more or less open to this fracking craze?
I think it's an all-out assault. Our current governor and our current legislature are conservative, and they love fracking because they keep saying it's going to improve the economy. And they don't talk about the environment, and they don't talk about the health issues. But Pennsylvania, as you said, has a very long history of energy. The first oil well was developed in Pennsylvania. And the large timbering industry, when I think of timbering, you know, I'm a Californian, and I used to think, you know, well, it's up in the Pacific Northwest and in Canada. And I didn't even think of Pennsylvania, but when I came out here, I learned that it was a huge industry. The first commercial gas well was in this area, and it's coal, anthracite coal. This is the center of all anthracite coal. And the more I learned about Pennsylvania, the more I realized energy companies come into the state, usually when there's an economic downturn, hire people and claim that they're giving people the jobs, and people take the jobs, and they strip the land, and they take the resources, and they leave and go somewhere else. And that's really the case of what happened in Pennsylvania. Certainly with the coal, they came in, they did deep mining. And when that didn't work out, you know, when it ran out that way, they started strip mining and not reclaiming the land. And then with natural gas and current horizontal fracking, that's exactly what's happening. They came in, they said, there's a lot of resource here, we're going to take it. The recession is bad, we're going to hire some people. And now they're starting to leave because the resources are, you know, making it uneconomical.
You know, I do listen to what the gas fracking lobby says, and they make some reasonable arguments about why we need local energy and the safe ways that we could do it. But I want to offer you a theory, Walter. I think fracking's a bit like nuclear energy in the sense that in a sensible, sane society, maybe we could do it without wrecking the environment. But this is us. This is humans. We like to make money. We like to cut corners, and we can buy influence when we can. What did you find out about the gas lobby and Pennsylvania politicians?
Well, I found out that the gas lobby is very, very good at what it does. They have all kinds of operations, a very expensive lobby. They dripped a whole lot of money upon the people in the legislature who are the ones that wrote the legislation for the fracking. And actually them and a conservative organization, a national conservative organization called ALEC, did the writing on it. The governor in Pennsylvania took well over $2 million in gas industry campaign funds for his race. And what I'm finding is that there's a direct correlation between the dripping of money on politicians and what they do. Now, with gas, I believe in natural gas. I think, you know, it's a good idea. It's not certainly what we want to do in the long run. I believe in renewable energy. and to develop that. But if we're putting all of our money into natural gas fracking, what we're not doing is putting it into solar and wind and geothermal. The United States alone has put over $4 billion each year into subsidies for the oil industry. And I think that if natural gas could be developed not just economically, but without impacting the environment and not impacting the health. Certainly, the vertical fracking did not have the problems that horizontal fracking brings out. I do not object to natural gas as long as it can protect our health and our environment, but that's where we differ with a lot of the industry. It's sort of all focused upon we're giving you jobs, and it's only a very lame excuse because the jobs leave in 2 to 5 years.
Josh Fox made Pennsylvania fracking kind of famous with his movie Gasland. Are the poison wells and flaming taps all over with? Have they fixed that?
No. We're still flaring. Up in North Dakota, they're flaring a third of all the gas directly into the atmosphere. A lot of wells are still going untapped. We're also finding that the destruction of the land, we're getting an awful lot of destruction of the land. For instance, in order to set up a well, you have to have a rig, and then several wells on a well pad, and you're talking 8 to 10 acres. Deforestation, they have to go in, they have to create the roads, they have to set up these frack pits in order to get the wastewater. And these frack pits, some of them are as much as an acre, and it's open. It's not like it's a closed system. It's open so it can evaporate. We've also got the arrogance of the industry at this point. Over 750 chemicals can go into the fracking fluids that go into the earth. Now, they don't all use, you know, all the fluids. I mean, they pick and choose whatever they think is right for that particular geology. But of the 750, 650 have been identified as carcinogens, including benzene, which is the main fluid that goes in, radon. And not only do they push it into the earth, when they take it back out, the wastewater back out, it's not reusable, it's not recyclable, like a nuclear plant can recycle most of its water. This cannot be recycled because they also bring out radioactive elements and other junk from beneath the earth and disturb the earth's surface. So this is also a problem that has not been addressed very well.
Walter Brash, give us more of the details about that Pennsylvania law that would have prohibited doctors from finding out what chemicals were poisoning their patients or even telling other people about the risks.
Yeah, here's what happened is that written into the legislation was the fact that a company could have what they call proprietary information on what they put into the well in order to frack it. Now, let's say that a doctor brilliantly figures out that one of his patients may have an illness that may be caused by a fluid or air emission or something that could be related to fracking because he's figured out that the patient lives, let's say, within a half mile of a well. Well, first of all, most doctors aren't trained to think that way because fracking is just recent in Pennsylvania and throughout the country, about five years back. So let's say they figured it out. So they go to the company and they say, we have a suspicion that maybe there may be something there. We don't know. We'd like to find out what you put in so that we could try to trace what these problems are. And the company can say, no, we don't want to tell you. Now, if the company says that, the physician's recourse is to ask, will you allow me to sign your non-disclosure statement? And they said, well, of course, we'll let you sign it, but you can't tell the patient, you can't tell any other doctor, you can't tell the public health people. Just because we're humanitarians, we're going to let you know what we put into the fluids. Maybe. Now, there's no proof that if they say we put in these 12 elements or these 12 chemicals, that that's all that they put in. But let's say they give you the, they say, here's the 15 things that you've asked for. The physician then looks at the patient and says, you know, that's not really my specialty. I mean, I can do this part, but I need to refer this patient to a neurologist, for instance. Well, it starts all over again, because under the law, officially, the doctor cannot then call the neurologist and say, here's what I suspect, and the neurologist says, fantastic. He can't even tell the patient what he got. So he had this non-disclosure statement. Now, the state health director and the governor and all those Republican types that we have running loose in Pennsylvania have said, that's not really what it means. Well, when you look at the law, that's exactly what it says. And they can't disguise it, because after the story started breaking, and AP picked up my stories, and it got further dissemination, people started to say, this doesn't seem to be right. Now, recently, the state Supreme Court ruled that a physician does have a right to find out what's in that fluids, but the industry still hasn't acknowledged that yet, and this is only a recent decision.
Were you able to document that there are health risks to fracking?
Yes. There are so many studies out at this point in peer-reviewed journals and online before they go into the journals about significant health risks from both air and water pollution. What we have is in, say, air pollution. Most natural gas, the composition is methane. Methane, first of all, traps more carbon dioxide than any other element, and it's bad for the climate. So that's just one point. But also, all the toxic chemicals that, say, are in those frack pits that are open or that are spilled onto the ground or into the rivers. And there's a lot of evidence that we've located about spills, both accidental and deliberate. And also the pipeline structure. In the United States, about half of all pipelines are 50 years or older. And so there's been a lot of leaks because the infrastructure has not been there to repair it by the companies. So you got spills, you got leaks, you got flaring, you got air pollution, you got water pollution, ground pollution. You've got even to the point of, let's say that a human being is not directly affected. If any of that wastewater, and they're using about 5 million gallons of water into every frack on every well. But let's say that they're bringing up, let's say, 3 million gallons. Let's say that some of it does manage to get onto the ground or spill into a river or stream. You got fish. You got other aquatic life. You go out to the stream, you think it's clean, you catch yourself a trout. You fry up the trout. Chances are you're going to get the same problem that you would get if you got mercury poisoning from, you know, albacore out in the ocean. So it's a recycling that an indirect problem. You've also got animals that are displaced, changing the balance of nature, because when you take a large road and direct it right through the middle of a forest in order to get your wells up, you've got that problem of balance of nature is disturbed. You got more animals moving into housing projects, for instance, because their own homes are no longer available. Up in North Dakota, the Bakken Shale, it's primarily oil, but it's also using horizontal fracking. They had a huge spill a couple months ago. I mean, just thousands and thousands of gallons. That land is not going to be able to be used to grow crops for many years now. And that's also one of the problems, is that most of the wheat in the United States, the best quality wheat is coming from the North Dakota area, about 75%. And that Amber Durham wheat lies above the ground that they're fracking in order to get oil. So the thing is that everybody's saying that this has the lowest unemployment in the United States in North Dakota. Oh, yeah, but look at the problem if you can't get to your food sources. In Central California, the Monterey Shale is pretty close to being fracked at this point. California's working out a few technicalities, but that's also the site of most of the fruit crops for the United States. Almost all the dates are grown in, raisins are in grapes in Central California. So if you're disturbing the agriculture, and you could also contaminate the agriculture that is there, you got us a huge problem.
Radio EcoShock.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. We're looking into fracking in America with Walter M. Brash, author of Fracking Pennsylvania, Flirting with Disaster. Walter, what is the harm list?
The harm list. Leukemias. A lot of the problems are leukemias that we found, pulmonary edema. We found caustic problems with, say, the workers. There are many, many cases that I've documented in this book and in the second edition, which is coming out in a couple of months, of workers who have been injured on the job. In fact, it is now the most dangerous job outside of firefighters. Some of it is because a lot of the new workers are new. They don't have the experience. Some of it is because they're working 12 to 16-hour days for 7 to 14 days in a row in order to make good money, and because the company figures it's a lot easier to hire one person willing to work 16-hour days than to hire two people. So we're seeing a lot of workplace injuries. We're seeing radiation poisonings. We're seeing cancers. We're seeing breathing difficulties. We're seeing the methane in the pipes getting into the well water. In Pennsylvania, about one-fifth of all the houses have well water as opposed to city water or large corporation pipes and so forth. So we're seeing methane getting into the pipes. Now, the methane itself is not a toxic chemical, but it's also very flammable. And so what happens is it gets into the water system, and it'll also take the oxygen out of the water. It'll also, because it's flammable, we've got pictures documented, both video and still pictures, of people turning on their taps, putting a cigarette lighter beneath the water drip, and they're going up in flame. So we're seeing these problems. We're seeing wells being flammable, exploding, and that becomes a problem. We're seeing if the methane does get into the water, that livestock drink, we're seeing all kinds of those kind of problems. Some veterinarians have done a very good study of health problems from fracking on animals.
What a wild list. You know, Walter, some local people do make money selling mineral rights to the companies, while others are left with nothing but the extra tanker trucks on the road, the noise, the worries, the bad smells. Does fracking tend to divide communities?
Definitely. We're seeing that in Pennsylvania. And in places that I've been doing the research, there's an awful lot of people that say, well, I'm getting money from this. That's what they were saying 3 years ago. They're not saying that now. I've encountered so many farmers that say, I wish I had known what was going to happen. And some people are getting rich. They tend to be the ones that have the larger farms. They're not the 40-acre farmers. They're not the small farmers. They're the corporate farmers that have 1,200 acres, 1,600 acres. The whole concept of mineral rights, you can own your house, but you may not own the mineral rights. But if you have both of those, you could sell the mineral rights or lease the mineral rights to a drilling company. And they're supposed to pay you a signing bonus and a certain percentage every month of what they're bringing up. What we're finding is that the reality is after the first year, the amount of production on a well tends to go down. Which is just very logical. And we're seeing the second and third year. After about the fourth year, you're not getting any production from that well. So people that thought, wow, I'm getting, let's pretend, $20,000 a year from all these wells and the mineral rights, all of a sudden they're finding out that after 3 or 4 years, they're getting almost nothing. And the companies were starting to charge the people holding the mineral rights that had leased it to the companies for things like advertising, marketing, and all kinds of things that it was legal. It's just that they didn't read the fine print. So they thought they were going to get maybe, like I said, $20,000. They're getting maybe $12,000.
And you've worked to help the homeless, Walter Brash. What happens to them as communities make more money while the boom is around?
That's a very good question. Up here in Pennsylvania, one of the biggest areas of drilling is in the Lycoming County, Williamsport, which is where the Little League World Series is. And what we're finding is that the landlords have figured out, well, you know, the economy isn't very good, but guess what? I can rent to people working in the industry for 3 or 4 times what I could before. So instead of, say, $300 or $400 one-bedroom apartment, they're now getting, say, $1,500, $1,600, $1,700 for that because the workers are, you know, paid fairly well. What we're seeing is that a lot of the people, like when their leases came up after a year or 6 months, they have no other place to go because there's no other place to put them. They can find another apartment for $300, $400, $500 a month. There's an increase of homelessness in that Lycoming County area where the Little League is, and throughout the Northeast Pennsylvania, which is the center of the drilling, and in the western part of the state by Pittsburgh. So we're finding more and more homelessness. We're finding more people having to go into shelters, unable to find housing because basically the housing is being taken by the workers from the industry who will be here for a year, maybe 2 years at the most, and then they're going to move on. And the landlords aren't getting the idea that after, let's say, 3 or 4 years now of this, when the industry starts leaving, they're going to have a whole lot of apartments, and nobody's going to want to move into those apartments because they've either found other housing or they've moved out of the state.
Tell us about your radio show briefly, The Frack Report.
Yeah, it's one of those shows I really didn't want to do because I am not a radio host. I'm more a print journalist, but WFTE in Scranton, a progressive station, wanted a half-hour show, and they conned me into doing this half-hour a week, so I just basically collect a lot of information of what's going on in the fracking industry and talk about it and do my commentary, and I sort of try to channel Ed Schultz, one of the best commentators on radio, and not doing a good job of that, but I do present a lot of information, what's happening in the fracking industry, and I try to make sure that it's factual, so I'm not just saying things that I make up or that other people have made up. Or these are actual facts, and I do the commentary, and for a half hour it goes out, and hopefully people listen to it.
Well, people can listen live anytime at WFTE.org, wherever you are in the world, so just check that website for the times and listen to the Frack Report. Do you have a website where people can find out more about your fracking book?
Yes, my personal website is www.walterbrash, and Brash is B-R-A-S-C-H, walterbrash.com. And that'll put you over to the publisher's website, which has all kinds of information, including what is fracking and some YouTube things about fracking and other information.
Great. The book is Fracking Pennsylvania, Flirting with Disaster. I thought it was going to be too local for the show, but I found this is one of the best books I've encountered to really drill down into what fracking is all about wherever you live. We've been talking with the author, professor and journalist Walter M. Brash. Walter, thanks so much for the education and for talking with us.
Well, I appreciate it, and thank you very much.
I'm Alex Smith for Radio EcoShock. Big Picture Radio right now with Alex Smith. Get it all, ecoshock.org.